That's because Rich is on and he's recording us. Thank you, Rich. Virginia asked Rob Hansen from Milwaukee County. I mean, that would be a good thing for us to hear. What's it like a week later? You want to say something about what happened in Wisconsin last week, Joy or Rob?
Well, it was a little disappointing that the exit polls were a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
But we're keeping up the hope. Right now we're helping out with the striking workers at Palermo's Pizza.
Okay.
And, standing in solidarity with them and organizing some different marches down there.
Is Palermo's Pizza like a chain?
You can buy them at most grocery stores around here. I'm not sure about the rest of the country.
Oh, it's packaged in grocery stores.
Mm. Yeah, they sell them at Miller Park as well for the ball games.
So what kind of abuse does a pizza worker, I mean, doesn't get paid well enough?
Actually, mostly safety concerns.
Oh.
So they were going to organize their own union because the company wasn't listening to them.
Uh-huh.
And the union was threatening to do immigration audits on them.
Oh, yes.
So now the National Labor Relations Board is going to look into the case.
Okay, good.
Hmm.
So,
gosh, in California, the pizza workers are all high school kids.
it's a fairly large factory, I guess. If we call it a factory, I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it would be a factory.
Yeah.
Factory food.
So, yeah. So they actually employ quite a few people. So I know 150 of the workers walked out and started a strike.
Oh.
Excuse me, I was thinking of your mom and pop corner pizza parlor.
Yes.
I wasn't thinking of a...
Oh, no, it's a little bigger than that.
I would say.
Yes. All right, but we've missed a few people that haven't said their name.
David Swanson.
I was hoping that one of those would be David Swanson. Hi.
Hi.
Our speaker from Charlottesville, Virginia. Right?
Virginia.
Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm of UVA.
Okay.
Hi, guys. Bill Honigman, Dr. Bill, California.
Hi, Dr.
Hi,
Bill.
Bill. This is Armita.
Dr. Bill.
Hi. Good to hear you.
Yeah.
Someone else trying to say their name? I don't know what time it is by now.
Well, it's 6:05.
After the hour.
All right, one more time. Is there anyone who hasn't said their name? Okay, and next we'll ask one of those people from St. Petersburg, Florida, to unmute and talk to us.
Yes. So welcome, everyone. I'm Virginia Hoffler, and Sally Weiss is my co-coordinator of End the Wars and Occupations issue organizing team for PDA. Welcome to the call. We are going to start out with a brief message from Mike Fox, who's going to do a little rallying cry for us. Mike, are you there?
Indeed I am. In the words of the inimitable Dr. Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Fantastic. I've learned that well from the good doctor. All right, first and foremost, gang, thank you so much for being on the call here. Secondly, I'm definitely looking forward to what David has to say here. Been a big fan of his. As a matter of fact, I was a part of a group who ran a couple of events during one of his previous book tours down here in Tampa Bay. He absolutely knocked it out of the park when he was in town down here, and I'm looking forward to the same park out knocking, as it were, this evening. I'm sure it'll be great. I just wanted to say two things, actually. Number one, give a brief thank you for those who participated in the Norman Solomon Phone Bank. For those who are not familiar, I'm quite confident the vast majority of people here are, but for those who are not familiar, Norman Solomon, of course, our endorsed candidate, phenomenal peace candidate out in California's 2nd District. Votes have not yet been totally tallied. As it stands right now, Norman is about 1% out. However, he's trending in a positive direction. So we're all biting our fingernails over whether or not Norman makes it through this. But I did want to say thank you so much to those on the call who gave us a hand. As an organization, we did more calls than we've ever done for a candidate. We did over 26,000 of them with over 5,000 conversations with voters and 16,000 left messages, which, of course, is as good as a piece of direct mail. And I'm quite confident that had we just done another 10 to 15% more than that, we wouldn't be biting our fingernails right now. However, be that as it may, I'd like to thank everybody on this call who participated in the phone bank, and have a few special shout-outs to who went that extra dial, as it were, including, I know Sandy, I don't know if Sandy's on this evening. I believe he's traveling in Europe. However, Sandy was, as always, a leader, as he's normally a leader on this call. Russell Friedman, Sally Weiss, Bill Hoffman, Dan O'Neill, all doing in excess of 200 telephone calls each. And if there's anyone on the call who I have not mentioned, if you participated, please do shout out so that we can recognize you. And an extra special shout out to Beverly Nelms, who is on the call this evening. I just wanted to let everyone know that she did all on her own 2,738 telephone calls on the behalf of a congressperson that she couldn't vote for. And that's just mind-boggling to me, and I want to say thank you so much, Beverly, for that solidarity that you showed. And speaking of which, my second topic for the evening, another victory that we had on this call a couple of months back. I want to thank all who participated in our IoT call challenge the last time that I was on the call. For those who aren't on, who weren't on that, we simply put forth the challenge for all of our issue organizing teams to take a little bit additional ownership of the website and the database management tool that we use to help us organize these calls as well as the organization as a whole. The wonderful website, when you go to www.pdamerica.org, or if you're on community site right now, that's what we're talking about. It's a powerful tool. However, it doesn't come for free, and we pay over $2,000 a month for it. So we simply ask the members of this IoT to cover $250 of that, more if possible, tonight. We're going to do the public TV kind of a thing. If you're already a ChangeMix Change partner, wonderful. Thank you so much. Please, I know several people on this call already are, and please consider increasing your commitment to cover that $250 request tonight. A single person making a $20 commitment per month for a year, basically.
Hi.
As I was saying, a single person making a new commitment for a month for a year basically covers that. Of course, a single donation is welcome as well. And as a matter of fact, anyone who either comes on board tonight as a new $10 per month sustainer or gives $50 tonight, you'll receive a copy of Norman Solomon's book, Made Love, God of War, as our gift. So I'll be watching the tally as the call progresses, just like they do in public radio and TV, and I hope I'll have good news to report at the end of the call. And thank you so much for anything that you do. And as I said, I'm really looking forward to what David has to say. Thank you all for anything that you do. Peace.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, was there someone else who came on the call? No. Okay.
Do we know how to get people onto Change Makes Change or whatever Mike's device is? And we should have mentioned the chat room and muting ourselves. So I'll start with muting. *6 mutes each of us. I was talking just a minute ago and realizing I was muted. So *6, it's good to be muted when you're not talking because it makes the line clearer. And the chat room, Rich, could you talk us how we get on the chat room? And maybe you can help us with Change Makes Change, too. This is my Rich Gardner, our tech on the call. Hello, Rich? Carl, can you explain how to put chat room on?
Okay, now that I'm unmuted. I just have the URL of pdacommunity.org/issues/endwarsandoccupations.
All right, say it again.
I have is pdacommunity.org/issues. slash End Wars and Occupation.
And where on that page do you find the chat room?
Okay, starting at the top, you have End Wars and Occupation, Join, Change, Issue Team. You head on down, you see photos of our two glorious leaders, and then you see agenda, and then you see the chat room. There's a little chat room thing on the right side of the screen.
In a box.
Yep.
And Wars and Occupation chat room, it says.
Yep.
That's it. Has a little message from Rich Gardner right at the top. Yes.
There we go.
And is everybody clear if they, I mean, I really hope people will give a dollar donation. So are we clear how we do that? Mike, are you on the website? Can you tell us?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Fantastic. It's very, very easy. If you're sitting on that website, literally under Take Action on the right-hand side, you see Donate! Exclamation point. And if anybody has any questions how to do that, you can simply email me at mikefox@pbamerica.org, and I'll be more than happy to walk you through the process.
All right, say, you're, say
look
that.
Look for literally mikefox, M-I-K-E-F-O-X, at pbamerica.org, or on the right-hand side of the website, on the right-hand column, under Take Action, you see Donate.
Yes.
And it's all very self-explanatory on the form. Or if anyone has any questions, feel free to hit me up with an email, and we'll make it happen. Thank you so much.
This is not the front website of the whole organization. This is what's called the community website. So if you're on the still, if you're lost and you're still looking at the top website where you just say PDA, then you need to go down on the right-hand side of that particular website. If you don't use what Rich told us, which is the URL, then you find where it says community website, and that's where all of what we've just talked about is. Should we take another couple of seconds and hear who else is on the call?
Yeah.
This is Shahrazad. I just came on.
What, say your name again.
Shahrazad from California.
Okay, good. Who else? Quite a few people have come on and not said their names. Anyone else?
Jim Carpenter from Milwaukee.
Say your first name again.
Jim Carpenter from Milwaukee.
This is someone who almost has the same name as Tim Carpenter, but not really. All right, that makes at least three people from the great state of Wisconsin on tonight, yes. Anyone else want to say their name? Okay. Take it, Virginia.
All right, then we're going to move on. Our featured speaker today is David Swanson, author of War is a Lie, blogs regularly, and works with Roots Action. He's host Talk Nation Radio, a great peace activist. I've had the pleasure of meeting a few times. So, David, take it away. Let us know also what happened at NATO, at the NATO protests, and, of course, the other agenda items are also on the website. Let us know any actions that you feel we should be following up on. Take it away, David.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Wonderful to see familiar names in the chat room and on the phone call. I was asked to be prepared to talk at a little bit of length about a bunch of different war-related issues, and so in hopes of not going too incredibly long and covering enough topics to at least start a conversation, I've drafted remarks which I'll read, and if I seem to be going off track or anything else, just interrupt me. So a magazine asked me this morning for my thoughts on Iraq and the peace movement. What did this war produce? And I replied, over 1 million human beings killed, plus extensive structural and cultural damage amounting to sociocide, which we could have prevented and didn't, which we could regret and make reparations for, but instead are largely uninformed about. A lesson taught to other nations that nuclear weapons are needed to prevent a U.S. invasion, a lesson also taught by the assault on Libya. A lesson taught to other nations that might makes right and aggressive killing and torture are to be used when one can get away with it. Entrenchment of fossil fuel war industry, environmental damage, economic damage, damage to international relations, and a huge rollback in civil liberties and the right to assemble and protest. And enormous enlargement of the war industry, privatization of the military, and a strengthened ability to legally bribe politicians and control them. In peace movement, there's good and bad. We exposed the lies on which the war was based and educated everyone else, but most still do not grasp that lies are common to all wars. They think this one was unique. We played a role in ending the war, but it was actually a larger role than we are aware of, so people don't take enough encouragement from it. We built international relations among peace activists in numerous nations, building an anti-bases movement and an anti-NATO movement, and building relations with activists in the nations attacked by ours as well. We exposed the financial cost and the cost to U.S. military lives, but again, few know about the far greater cost in Iraqi lives, and very few understand that the base military budget dwarfs the war budget and is equally misspent. Coming out of that, we have a nation strongly opposed to massive ground wars, but we have a nation willing to accept air and drone wars. And why not? They don't hurt anybody. We should have been much stronger, and we should have pushed harder when the Democrats took power by pretending to listen to us. Instead, three-quarters of the U.S. peace movement went to sleep. So we have to have Republicans in power to have a peace movement, which is obviously a severe weakness. So what, I was asked, should be done to mark the 10-year anniversary of the invasion next March? This was a magazine that was obviously planning ahead. We should apologize, I said. We should make reparations to Iraq and much of the region, including Afghanistan and Pakistan and Yemen, etc., all of which our troops should leave immediately. We should launch cultural and student exchange programs instead. We should open prosecutions of those responsible from Bush and Obama on down. We should move funding from the military to green energy. We should shut down all foreign bases. We should announce the dismantling of all nuclear weapons. We should end NATO. We should reaffirm the Kellogg-Briand Pact. We should reform and democratize the UN and the ICC, or at least those of us willing to have a peace movement, either because Romney is president or because we're willing to confront Obama now that he's a lame duck and really, really doesn't give a damn, should move things as far as we can in that direction. In the meantime, we should build on what was built in Chicago protesting NATO. We should assist in opposing what look like false prosecutions of activists coming out of that event. We should learn the approach being developed by militarized police forces around the country, which includes huge numbers of undercover police and infiltrators, attempts at entrapment and provocation, and public relations scare tactics used to demonize activists and reduce participation. We should learn from what worked in terms of coalition building and turnout, and what arguably could have been done better, such as a public commitment to nonviolence by the organizers. We cannot reduce public organizing, education, and pressure to elections. We've just seen how that works in Wisconsin. I had the misfortune to catch a bit of Bill Maher last night, and he was denouncing Occupy Wall Street for not being as smart as the Tea Party, not being as serious, not devoting itself to electing people. As if the Tea Partiers who opposed bank bailouts have elected representatives of that point of view. As if the Tea Partiers who opposed restrictions on civil liberties have elected people. As if Tea Partiers outraged by the concentration of power and wealth in a corrupt two-tiered system have had their concerns remotely answered. To the extent that the Tea Party has actually changed anything, it has done so primarily by pressuring the government from the outside, including by demanding that the Republicans become even worse than they were or be abandoned. This has produced walking disasters of officials independent enough to sometimes get things right, as when Senator Rand Paul has blocked pro-war legislation. Occupy Wall Street has the Netroots abomination and the Take Back the American Dried Up Raisin in the Sun conferences with their support for war and anything else if it's capital D Democratic. And it's to the credit of every activist who has avoided falling into that trap. We should be lobbying Congress for good bills and for better bills that don't exist yet. There are bills to end the authorization to use military force, to ban the sale of weapons to abusive countries. It's unclear whether that includes our own, and to require diplomacy with Iran. There should be bills to begin a process of conversion from a military to a civilian economy. But primarily, we should be educating, organizing, and building a movement to resist the bipartisan pro-war consensus. We should not be dumping our energies into lesser evil electioneering. Here are some upcoming events. June 17th, and these are all listed with links at warisacrime.org under events. June 17th, there's going to be a protest in New York of abuse and targeting of Muslims. June 24th, a march against torture in D.C. And that week of June 22nd to 26th, actions against torture everywhere. July 14th is Peace Stock in Wisconsin. August 8th to 12th is the Veterans for Peace Convention in Florida. August 27 to 30th, the RNC, and September 1 to 6th, the DNC. Now, on Afghanistan, I think we need to insist that staying is not the best way of leaving. We have three quarters of the United States with us on wanting to end the U.S. occupation of Afghanistan. There is no need to worry about being too radical. There is no need to frame our position so as to appeal to patriotic entrepreneurs and so forth. Three-quarters of the country agrees with us. Can we get them active? Can we get them talking, writing letters, calling shows, blogging, marching, attending events, pushing their organizations and the media and Congress? Obama wants to keep a large number of troops in Afghanistan for another 2.5 years, reducing them at an unspecified rate to an unspecified number, and then keeping them there 10 more years, after which it will be time to step back and consider the situation. The House, but apparently not the Senate, wants to require a minimum of 68,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan. But Obama already wants the funding at that level and is committed to considering after the election whether to take the Pentagon's advice and keep 68,000 or defy the Pentagon. Betting on what that actually means largely comes down, I think, to whether you imagine that, contrary to all established history, a politician gets better by becoming a lame duck rather than worse. We need to demand all troops home now, to expose the horror of the war, to amplify the voices of Afghans opposing the occupation, to encourage resistance in the military, to escalate our protests, and to build understanding of the numerous trade-offs, financial and otherwise. We also need to resist cries for U.S. war in Syria. There are remarkably few stories in our corporate media about the healthy state of democracy in Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, or anywhere else the United States has built a nation by destroying one. There is little outrage over killing and torture by U.S. allies in Bahrain. Many supporters of war in Syria are quite open about their motivation of overthrowing a government that is friendlier to Iran than to Israel. But Tunisia and Egypt have brighter futures because of the tools of nonviolence. Violence is not over quickly. When the U.S. armed fighters in Afghanistan in the 1980s, the damage was not easily contained or short-lived. Pouring gasoline on a fire in Syria could be worse. We need to expose the lies about Iran and to remind people constantly of the lies that they knew were lies about Iraq. Possessing weapons is not grounds for war. Iran is not working on any nuclear weapons. An Israeli war will be understood by Iran and by the world as U.S. authorized, as it will be. Iran has not violated the Non-Proliferation Treaty while the United States has. War and threats of war are crimes. Sanctions that starve people, not to mention so-called cyber war, are properly considered acts of war. Iran has threatened no one and has sought to agree to inspections and control of uranium not required by any law or treaty. But the U.S. president and most Congress members are pretending that the onus is on Iran to cease doing what we know it is not doing. Meanwhile, Obama, not content with having enlarged the military, its global presence, its budget, its privatization, its power to operate within the United States as a police force, and its capacity to act in secrecy, has given himself the power to murder anyone, anywhere, picking the names of the nominees, as they're called, from his secret kill list. RootsAction.org, which I work for, is launching a petition aimed at banning weaponized drones and undoing the kill list program. Numerous organizations are taking part, and the petition will be sent to every possible national and international authority. Your organization, including PDA, is invited to sign on. Part of what drives all of this madness is the money poured into it. The military budget has grown every year that Bush or Obama has been president thus far, and even more so if one looks at all the departments that get military spending. Obama is proposing to cut Iraq and Afghanistan war spending in the military budget from $88 billion to $44 billion, a halfway measure for wars he claims are over or ending. And the Budget Control Act requires, unless Congress undoes it, that $55 billion more be cut. But it could be cut from veterans care, from non-military diplomacy, or from other non-military areas. Even if it is cut from the military, we're talking about $55 billion out of a budget that is well over $1 trillion. We ought to be insisting on much larger cuts and building a major coalition of groups that want the spending for useful purposes, want their civil liberties, want our natural environment, and want to stop killing people. And I'll stop there and check the chat room.
Thank you, David. Okay, do we have any questions for David?
There's a lot of links to articles in here, but I don't know if I can read them while we're on the phone.
David, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there any estimate of the number of people that will remain in Afghanistan after 2014? And if so, do we have any idea how many for counterterrorism and how many for training?
Well, the last part is the easiest. The claim is that they will all be for training. They will all be non-combat troops. They will all be people who have been trained and armed for combat but are now characterized as non-combat troops, whatever those are. I haven't seen somebody, if someone else knows, they should speak up, but I don't believe that any numbers have been identified. It's simply been stated that it will be a greatly reduced presence and it will be a non-combat presence for U.S. and other NATO troops in Afghanistan.
Thank you.
So basically, David, you feel we should be back out in the streets just really honing our protest to demand fewer troops, more cuts in military spending, and getting the word out that way about what actually is going on in Afghanistan. I don't think a lot of people realize that the plan is to stay until 2024.
I doubt that they do. That was not the headline. That was, you know, paragraph 5. So I doubt.
Well, this is Shahrzad from California. First of all, I am so impressed with your ability to convey, you know, all this information in such a clear fashion. And I learned a lot in just, 10 minutes that you spoke. And I'm thinking, my gosh, you know, there's a lot of people that don't know about this information. And why can't we use these conference calls to access more people, not just PDA, you know, PDA people, but I mean, I don't know how much these conference calls can accept in terms of number, but this is a fantastic teaching tool that I'm just thinking it might be a great way to continue to spread the word, David.
Well, thank you. That's all very nice of you to say, and I agree. Future calls, make the most of them. And what I just said, I wrote down first, so I will post it on warisacrime.org as written text after this call. And by all means, please spread it far and wide.
Well, you know, written, we get so much in writing, less in hearing, you know, quality information. So to me, us auditory learners would really benefit from, you know, I don't know how we can advertise these kinds of calls more, but it's a fantastic teaching tool. In terms of questions, wow, I have so many. I mean, Iran, like, what is your, I mean, okay, so in terms of what we need to do here, us activists in the U.S., is continue to raise hell? I mean, is that what you're basically suggesting, that we need to continue to pressure our legislators?
Well, I think we need to educate our neighbors and our friends and people in the neighborhoods that the peace movement has no presence in. I think we need to organize large numbers of people to spread that education, and that we need to push our local governments to pass resolutions and to pass ordinances banning drones and to begin work on local conversion of weapons factories to civilian purposes. We need to pressure our state governments. We need to pressure through those levels of government to Washington, and we need to build as powerful a force as we can to say to our so-called representatives in our capital that we will not stand for this, which is, you know, slightly different from the message that's now being put out by the Netroots Nation Conference and the Take Back America Yet Again Conference, which is essentially, we will vote for you guys no matter what you do to us, and afterwards we will ask you politely to please, you know, stop screwing everything up. I think we need a slightly different approach than that, there is electoral work that I think can be useful. I think having Norman Solomon in Congress would be valuable. We're going to be without Kucinich, we're going to be without even Woolsey. It would be hugely advantageous to have Norman there. And even if he gets into the runoff and it's a very tough race, there can be educational and organizing value, at least for Northern California, in him running. But for the most part, this idea that we need to drop everything and go do elections is a very new and very bizarre complaint that, you know, not just Bill Maher makes to Occupy Wall Street, but everyone makes to independent activists, whereas, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. was never told he wasn't serious because he wasn't endorsing and campaigning for people. The movements that have significantly changed our country for the better were independent, long-term organizing activist movements that used the tens of thousands of tools of nonviolence to affect change. And this idea that elections is the only one is bizarre, and it's become widespread very quickly, as elections, of course, have rapidly become less useful. We have the choice in most cases between two lousy people, and the one who has more corporate spending is the one we supposedly choose.
Mm-hmm.
I would like, this is Carl Moose with Sally in Massachusetts. I would just like to remind people that on a previous call we had Steve Cobble, of PDA, who made the point that precisely the period we're in now, before the election, is the one time we have a window when politicians really might listen to us and listen to pressure, because now they care about our votes and how we feel about them and so on. After they're elected, they really, as you, David, made the point, that's when, especially if it's their last term, like it would be Obama's, they really couldn't care less what we say. So it's now is the window when we should be giving maximum pressure, not less.
And as a practical answer to what Jazz was getting at, part of what she was getting at, this call is recorded, and within a few days, Rich Gardner will have it so that you can listen to it on your computer. Maybe you're sophisticated enough to know how to you can take your computer into a meeting or send out the URL about the recordings. And last month's call was with Michael Eisinger, and the publicity for the call got screwed up. And so really most people will only hear Michael Eisinger from the recording. And the recording is where on the website? It's on the community page, Carl?
It is at the bottom, towards the bottom. It says End War and Occupations IoT Calls.
Right.
And the 5-8 call is there with Michael Eisinger.
And so David's call tonight, because he did give us a lot of information, it would be probably good to hear again for each of us. It will be on the website certainly by this time next week.
Alice from Bisbee, a question and a comment. The question is, it's very difficult to get anyone to come down and speak in smaller communities. I live in southeastern Arizona. We have the town of Sierra Vista, which is a military town, and it would be great to get somebody. And of course, we can't pay a lot, but in not Tucson and not Boston and not New York, people don't hear. We don't get to hear really good speakers on peace, on healthcare, on the issues. That's one comment, and I wonder if David or whoever would be willing to do some more small town, rural work. That's a question. If there's some way to get people into smaller areas to speak.
Well, one thing I would say is if you go to warisacrime.org/speakers, you will find a list of names and bios and phone numbers and email addresses of some of the people that I consider the best speakers we have, some of whom do almost nothing else but travel nonstop to every town, small and large, and speak for no compensation or for what they happens to be available. And I've done relatively little compared to some people of traveling and speaking, and I've been to many large and small towns, and I've never been anywhere, I think, that Anne Wright hadn't already been two or three times, that Ray McGovern hadn't been. I mean, there are certain people who go everywhere and are eager to go everywhere and are some of the best speakers. So I would look at that page and contact me and we can talk about it. I myself, would love to go there. It depends on timing and finances. I'm broke. I only go places that somebody pays me to go, meaning, you know, buys my plane ticket and so forth, doesn't have to, you know, pay me a big honorarium. And I only go places that I can go and not ruin my family life at home. So I would love to go there if it works out. And there are undoubtedly people that we can get there that can educate and inspire a crowd.
That would be great. that would be really terrific. And one comment that I have made, because I'm part of the Cochise County regular Democrats executive, I've made the statement that I will not vote for any candidate or support or give any energy to any candidate that supports any funding for war, drug wars, or the border, militarization of the border. So when we just had a special election for Ron Barber to take Gabrielle Giffords' seat, I voted for the Green. I told the Democrats. So I think that maybe PDA, even with Elizabeth Warren, we ought to give her qualified support.
I've dropped my participation in PDA. I don't have any right to speak on what PDA should or shouldn't do. But if you're not going to support candidates who tell warmongering lies, then you're not going to support Elizabeth Warren. If you go to her website and read her claims about Iran's threat to the United States, Iran's work on nuclear weapons, these are claims rejected unequivocally by the Secretary of so-called Defense, by the so-called intelligence agencies, by their Israeli counterparts. I mean, she is pushing not just undocumented, but explicitly contradicted claims that move our nation towards a war with Iran that will make the war with Iraq look like the cakewalk it was supposed to be. Yes, she wants the bankers to help pay for the next war. You know, I mean, that she thinks we shouldn't borrow the money, we should pay for the wars as we go and so forth. But I don't think that gets qualified support from someone who's opposed to wars.
Thanks. It's okay. I appreciate that.
Yes, and I agree, David, that we have to push this issue with all of our candidates and just be willing to say, I'm sorry I can't vote for you, even though you're a Democrat or whatever you are. That just because you're a Democrat doesn't mean I'm going to vote for you. You have to earn my vote, and part of that means being against further military buildup and any more wars.
Mike is saying on the chat room he wants to talk about what PDA is doing to try to change her behavior. Does Mike or somebody else want to?
Well, we shouldn't support her before she changes.
Well, I know. This is the whole backwards approach. We'll vote for you no matter what, but could you please, you know, I mean, I think that the correct order is, here's the platform we'll support. Will you meet it and earn our support? I mean, I think that's the
because I think we've been being blackmailed the other way. We've always been told if you don't vote for da-da-da is going to win, and that's really bad. And I think we need to blackmail them the other way. We need to say if you don't oppose the war, the progressive voices are not going to vote for you, and we're going to take a chance. We're going to risk it.
Well, I agree with you. Not everyone does, and I think we can respectfully disagree with each other on the lesser evil argument, because there are sane, decent people who accept the argument that the lesser evil is less evil and that you are down to these two choices. The main reason I reject it is how it leads most people to behave all the other days of a two-year period on things that I consider much more important than electoral work, in that once you have accepted holding your nose and voting for someone, In most cases, people tend to then think of that person as their team, and their job to one degree or another becomes cheering for one half of the government. As the whole government, you know, flushes our country and our planet down the tubes. And I think, you know, if you can go and vote for the lesser evil person and still maintain absolute principled independence every other day of the year, and bring pressure as the people to the government, apart from, you know, partisan cheerleading, then I don't really have a complaint. But for the most part, our activist groups, and most of them much more so than PDA, sell out the rest of the 2 year or 4 year period, and refuse to even criticize that lesser evil official, because doing so supports the threat of someone worse coming in the next election, as if it's an election every day. And so, you know, but there are good people who have the other opinion. I think in defense of common consensus, I think what we all agree on is what needs to be done apart from the elections, and I actually think that's 95% of what we need to do.
Could I get on the stack?
Let's get a stack together.
Okay. Give me some names.
Mike Fox.
Mike. And who else?
Did you get Leona?
Leona?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mike. Go.
Yeah, just very quickly. I think David brings up an absolutely wonderful point, and that is at the core of why PDA is the only national organization that I participate with, and that's because PDA tends to be the largest tent that includes inside and outside. And one of the issues that I have, quite frankly, with the peace community, is that. Sometimes we do not see all, and I consider myself a member of the peace community, sometimes in individual peace-related organizations, we are first and foremost focused on that issue, when we will be less than pragmatically flexible about other issues that we all agree on, issues of social justice, issues of the environment, issues of free elections, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that the Warren campaign is just indicative of where some of us see the baby being tossed out with the bathwater, as it were, if her stance on foreign policy is the know-all, be-all, tell-all. While I'll certainly show solidarity, I don't show solidarity at all with her foreign policy, with her advisor, and quite frankly, PDA National as well as individual activists are, as we speak, trying to get through to her. And is there the possibility that down the road, I certainly can't speak for the organization saying this, but is it possible down the road that an endorsement could be pulled? Possibly. However, at this point, I would just stand in solidarity with the endorsement up to this point, with the caveat that hopefully that endorsement means enough to the candidate that we can apply pressure, and that gets us back to electoral politics. The fact remains that the vast majority, and the majority of the people on this call, have participated in brown bag vigils, et cetera, where three people are standing there. And bottom line, that does not provide the pressure that is required to get some of these people to move. And that's why I'm a firm believer in the inside-outside strategy that PDA is engaged in. Are we in the street putting on street heat? Most definitely. And I show solidarity with the Occupy movement in that regard. Have been at Occupy demonstrations. Have been there as people are getting arrested. I did not get arrested. My hat is off to those who have gotten arrested. I've participated in funding legal funds for those folks, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll close with, while those who are supporting the inside-outside strategy, who recognize that the two cannot exist without the other, we will not get, as Tom Hartman eloquently stated, we will not get where we need to go, and Martin Luther King recognized as well that he did not get where he needed to go without someone with the power of the pen to stroke a law. And while I show 100% solidarity with the activism community, that it's the pressure from the outside that provided the majority of that change, there still has to be somebody on the inside that agrees with us. And I'll close by saying, while I am a board member of my local Democratic Executive Committee, I have pushed resolutions. For example, we were one of the few actual arms of the Democratic Party officially that stood up and supported Dennis Kucinich's H.R. 666 for the impeachment of Dick Cheney. I agree. I show 100% solidarity with folks who are pushing from the outside on issues like that. I likewise did outreach to 50% of the Occupy Facebook pages during the lead up to the Norman Solomon election. And out of those 50%, I did probably 70 individual outreaches to Occupy movements across the country. Not a single one of them stood up and made a single telephone call. Not one. Now, I readily recognize that as an organization, conceivably they were showing solidarity with the global Occupy movement, which is very much against playing a role in partisan politics in any way. However, I would still submit that there were private commitments that could have been made through that process and private conversations that could have been made that would have brought on board a solidarity with the political process that I know that some of the folks in the movement still hold. And all I'm asking is that the activism community recognize that there is an organization that is inside and outside, that's PDA. And when the activism community asks us to be there, we show up. And I would simply ask for the same kind of solidarity so that we get the critical mass. All of us have marched, probably all of us, have marched in Washington where there are 375,000 people. That wasn't critical mass. We didn't get done what we wanted to get done. So I show solidarity 100% with the activism community that we need more bodies from the non-traditional protest world to come on board. Likewise, we need more folks from the traditional protest world to come on board with us. And together we can make this happen. My apologies for that taking so long. Thank you for listening.
Let's let Leona talk.
Michael, Leona?
Yes, hi. Yeah. Hi, David Swanson. I appreciate your work, and I have high respect for your writings and everything. And I'm looking forward to listening to this talk once it's put out there on the Internet. I came into the call late. I'm sorry I missed almost everything. But what I wanted to ask you was if you could you share with us a little bit why you dropped your participation in PDA?
Well, I almost want to say needless to say, but it isn't. I too support the inside-outside strategy, which is part of what I've liked about PDA for years, in addition to liking the people who are part of PDA. But it's a question of how much. I mean, when you say we will have an inside and an outside strategy, it doesn't tell you whether that's 50-50, which one drives the other. And my perspective is that we as a nation and as a movement need much more emphasis on the outside strategy without eliminating the inside strategy, but it needs to come second and to follow from the other rather than the reverse. When this idea that, we'll endorse a candidate even though we disagree fundamentally on that one little detail called foreign policy, strikes me as wrong. The opposite is clearly not the case, right? You take somebody like Ron Paul, and we all agree with his foreign policy, but we reject him completely because of his domestic policy. We don't treat domestic policy as one little footnote. And I think that when over half of federal discretionary spending is going into war and war preparation, and that's driving the domestic agenda in terms of civil liberties, in terms of cutbacks and trade-offs, in terms of our approach to energy and the environment, it can't be so cleanly separated. There's just not a good way to have a good domestic policy agenda as a nation while having this foreign policy agenda. It can't be done. And I think that if you're going to be among the most principled progressive groups, picking and choosing for those few candidates that are ever more few and far between, who actually have decent principled stands across the board on the major issues and actually back popular will on those issues, then, you know, there's just not a reason to throw your support behind, you know, a typical warmongering candidate that already has the backing of all of the less principled, more inside, less outside, less progressive groups. The Democratic Party is what I have the hardest time being associated with in any way, and sadly that's in PDA's name. But it's also just a question of the balance tipping too far in one direction. It's not a fundamental rejection of the idea of having an inside policy and speaking to people in power and trying to take power. You know, it's not this simplistic. It's a question of how much emphasis where.
I see. One last question, if I could, right quick. Do you think what happened in Wisconsin is actually what happens when movements turn into campaigns? I saw an article about that just recently. I don't know. Howard Zinn himself, Howard Zinn himself, often said that electoral campaigns are, you know, is where movements go to die.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think Howard Zinn also said it's not so much who's sitting in the White House as who's doing the sitting in outside the White House. I think that he also had some sympathy for Emma Goldman's remark that if elections alone changed anything, they would ban them. We could talk for hours and hours about Wisconsin, and others on this call know more about it than I do, I'm sure. But, you know, there is the problem that our elections go to the highest bidder, but that's a problem we all know about when we choose to dump all our eggs into the basket of an election. There's the problem that in the case of Wisconsin, you didn't have a candidate to back who supported the positions of the movement that had generated the energy and the recall. You had a more typical, rather lousy candidate, at least my impression from afar. We've seen the same problem in Egypt. We've seen the same problem around this country and elsewhere for years and years, that elections are very limiting. And when they limit you to a bad candidate who's not as bad as the other candidate, and they limit you to a process that is dominated by money and corporate media, you're boxing yourself in. I think that the movement was gradually taken over by groups, and in particular the Democratic Party, that have a great deal of money and resources, but not exactly the same agenda as the people who started the movement in Wisconsin, which was growing and was building a huge coalition and was educating and inspiring and gaining energy, and I think needs to get back to that, and needs to get over the, you know, having gone through the misguided cycle of optimistic expectation for an election, as everybody did in 08 with Obama. Win or lose, you then have to get over the inevitable misguided cycle of despondency and despair that either your guy lost or, you know, as in the case of Obama, your guy won, and get back to where you were and build it larger. I think Wisconsin was very much headed in the right direction a year ago.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, David. I think the fight continues within PDA as well as without, as to, you know, trying to win the heart and soul of PDA. There are those of us who definitely feel like you. The outside part is at least, is definitely more important than the inside part. But there's others that believe the inside part is more important. So that finding that balance is always going to be a work in process. So once again, we will have this tape on the recording of this call on the website. Please look for it in the next couple of days. Anything else you'd like to say to wrap up, David? We really appreciate the conversation.
David, you want to repeat your organization's just so people know how to follow you.
Well, I appreciate it very much as well, and I completely agree with those closing remarks, and I think some individuals are good at certain strategies and types of work, and others are good at other things, and so it's not that every single activist needs to split their duties and their tasks in exactly the proportion that I think is appropriate. I think different people are good at different things as well. But if we work well together with each other, you know, we can be a larger movement. But I'm at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org and rootsaction.org, and I'll post the remarks that I started this call with at those first two websites in just a second.
And you have a book out.
I have a number of books out, and if you go to davidswanson.org/store, you'll see them.
Thank you. Mike, you want to give us a dollar report? Okay,
Michael.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I got nothing to report.
Uh-oh.
So it is what it is, and thank you all for listening. And if we can jump on that here later on this evening, I think what is absolutely inspirational about what transpired on this call is that PDA is open to discussions that are critical of PDA.
That's right.
That's an absolutely beautiful thing, and I would hope that we take that energy. And remember, as David in his closing suggested, that bottom line, we need each other in this. Fragmenting us is certainly not the strategy. And if all of us just remember that at the end of the day, we're all working towards the same ends, that would be a beautiful thing. And one of the ways to work towards that mutual end is to support this organization that is open to that type of discussion. And thank you all for participating tonight.
And I'm pleased that that discussion seems to be going on in the chat room a little
thank
more
you, that was great.
Unusual, and that's good.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And, you know, I think David Swanson, I didn't take from that he was downputting us. I think he was suggesting a shift in focus. But, you know, overall, I think it was positive what he was saying.
Yeah,
I think it was a great discussion, and I really thank David, and I thank you, Virginia and Sally, and PDA, and all the organizations that are trying their very best.
And announce the next call, Virginia.
The date of the next call, June. Anyway, we'll contact.
July.
Second July. Tuesday in July.
Second Tuesday in July, correct.
Very good.
Right? I think
night.